Chapter 18. Wicked. Wicked so as to frighten most people. I will tell you what he was. He was nothing less than a thief and a murderer at heart. And do you think he's any different now because he's dead? Not he. His carcass lies 100 fathom under, but he's just the same. In latitude 80-20 north. He snorted defiantly. I noted with weary resignation that the breeze had got lighter while he raved. He was at it again. I ought to have thrown the beggar out of the ship over the rail like a dog. It was only on account of the men. Fancy having to read the burial service over a brute like that. Our departed brother. I could have laughed. That was what he couldn't bear. I suppose I am the only man that ever stood up to laugh at him. When he got sick it used to scare that. Brother. Brother. Departed. Sooner call a shark brother. The breeze had let go so suddenly that the way of the ship brought the wet sails heavily against the mast. The spell of deadly stillness had caught us up again. There seemed to be no escape. Hallo! Exclaimed Mr. Burns in a startled voice. I'm again. I addressed him, as though he had been sane. This is the sort of thing we've been having for 17 days, Mr. Burns, I said with intense bitterness. Puff, then a calm, and in a moment, you'll see, she'll be swinging on her heel with her head away from her course to the devil somewhere. He caught at the word. He old dodging devil, he screamed piercingly, and burst into such a loud laugh as I had never heard before. It was a provoking, mocking peal, with a hair-raising, screeching over note of defiance. I stepped back, utterly confounded. Instantly there was a stir on the quarter-deck, murmurs of dismay. A distressed voice cried out in the dark below us, colon, who's that gone crazy now? Perhaps they thought it was their captain? Rush is not the word that could be applied to the utmost speed the poor fellows were up to, but in an amazing short time every man in the ship able to walk upright had found his way onto that poop. I shouted to them, colon, it's the mate. Lay hold of him, a couple of you. I expected this performance to end in a ghastly sort of fight. But Mr. Burns cut his derisive screeching dead short and turned upon them fiercely, yelling. Aha! Doggone ye! You found your tongues, have ye? I thought you were dumb. Well, then laugh. Laugh, I tell you. Now then, all together. One, two, three, laugh. A moment of silence ensued, of silence so profound that you could have heard a pin drop on the deck. Then Ransom's unperturbed voice uttered pleasantly the words. I think he has fainted, sir. The little motionless knot of men stirred, with low murmurs of relief. I've got him under the arms. Get hold of his legs, someone. Yes. It was a relief. He was silenced for a time. I could not have stood another peal of that insane screeching. I was sure of it. And just then Gambrel, the austere Gambrel, treated us to another vocal performance. He began to sing out for relief. His voice wailed pitifully in the darkness, colon, come aft, somebody. I can't stand this. Here she'll be off again directly and I can't. I dashed, aft myself, meeting on my way a hard gust of wind whose approach Gambrel's ear had detected from afar, and which filled the sails on the main in a series of muffled reports mingled with the low plaint of the spars. I was just in time to seize the wheel, while Frenchy, who had followed me, caught up the collapsing Gambrel. He hauled him out of the way, admonished him to lie still where he was, and then stepped up to relieve me, asking calmly, how am I to steer her, sir? Dead before it for the present. I'll get you a light in a moment. But going forward I met Ransom bringing up the spare binnacle lamp. That man noticed everything, attended to everything, shed comfort around him as he moved. As he passed me, he remarked in a soothing tone that the stars were coming out. They were. The breeze was sweeping clear the sooty sky, breaking through the indolent silence of the sea. The barrier of awful stillness which had encompassed us for so many days, as though we had been accursed, was broken. I felt that. I let myself fall onto the skylight seat. A faint white ridge of foam, thin, very thin, broke alongside. The first for ages, for ages. I could have cheered, if it hadn't been for the sense of guilt which clung to all my thoughts secretly. Ransom stood before me. What about the mate? I asked anxiously. Still unconscious? Well, sir, it's funny, Ransom was evidently puzzled. He hasn't spoken a word, and his eyes are shut. But it looks to me more like sound sleep than anything else. I accepted this view as the least troublesome of any, or at any rate, least disturbing. Dead faint or deep slumber, Mr. Burns had to be left to himself for the present. Ransom remarked suddenly. I believe you want a coat, sir. I believe I do, I sighed out. But I did not move. What I felt I wanted were new limbs. My arms and legs seemed utterly useless, fairly worn out. They didn't even ache. But I stood up all the same to put on the coat when Ransom brought it up. And when he suggested that he had better now a gamble forward, I said, all right, I'll help you to get him down on the main deck. I found that I was quite able to help too. We raised Gambrel up between us. He tried to help himself along like a man, but all the time he was inquiring piteously. You won't let me go when we come to the ladder? You won't let me go when we come to the ladder? The breeze kept on freshening and blew through, through to a hair. At daylight by careful manipulation of the helm we got the 4 yards to run square by themselves, the water keeping smooth, and then went about hauling the ropes tight. Of the 4 men I had with me at night, I could see now only 2. I didn't inquire as to the others. They had given in. For a time only I hoped. Our various tasks forward occupied us for hours, the 2 men with me moved so slow, and had to rest so often. One of them remarked that very blame thing in the ship felt about 100 times heavier than its proper weight. This was the only complaint uttered. I don't know what we should have done without Ransom. He worked with us, silent too, with a little smile frozen on his lips. From time to time I murmured to him, go steady, take it easy, Ransom, and received a quick glance in reply. When we had done all we could do to make things safe, he disappeared into his galley. Some time afterward, going forward for a look round, I caught sight of him through the open door. He sat upright on the locker in front of the stove, with his head leaning back against the bulkhead. His eyes were closed, his capable hands held open the front of his thin cotton shirt bearing tragically his powerful chest, which heaved in painful and labored gasps. He didn't hear me. I retreated quietly, and went straight onto the poop to relieve Frenchy, who by that time was beginning to look very sick. He gave me the course with great formality, and tried to go off with a jaunty step, but reeled widely twice, before getting out of my sight. And then I remained all alone aft, steering my ship, which ran before the wind with a buoyant lift now and then, and even rolling a little. Presently Ransom appeared before me with a tray. The sight of food made me ravenous all at once. He took the wheel, while I sat down of the after grating to eat my breakfast. This breeze seems to have done for our crowd, he murmured. He just laid them low all hands. Yes, I said. Suppose you and I are the only 2 fit men in the ship. Frenchy says there's still a jump left in him. I don't know. It can't be much, continued Ransom with his wistful smile. Good little man that. But suppose, sir, that this wind flies round, when we are close to the land, what are we going to do with her? If the wind shifts round heavily, after we close in with the land she will either run ashore, or get dismasted or both. We won't be able to do anything with her. She's running away with us now. All we can do, is to steer her. She's a ship without a crew. Yes. All laid low, repeated Ransom quietly. I do give them a look in forward every now and then, but it's precious little I can do for them. I, and the ship, and everyone on board of her, are very much indebted to you, Ransom, I said warmly. He made as though he had not heard me, and steered in silence till I was ready to relieve him. He surrendered the wheel, picked up the tray, and for a parting shot informed me that Mr. Burns was awake, and seemed to have a mind to come up on deck. I don't know how to prevent him, sir. I can't very well stop down below all the time. It was clear that he couldn't. And sure enough, Mr. Burns came on deck dragging himself painfully aft in his enormous overcoat. I beheld him with a natural dread. To have him around and raving about the wiles of a dead man, while I had to steer a wildly rushing ship full of dying men, was a rather dreadful prospect. But his first remarks were quite sensible in meaning and tone. Apparently he had no recollection of the night scene. And if he had, he didn't betray himself once. Neither did he talk very much. He sat on the skylight looking desperately ill at first, but that strong breeze, before which the last remnant of my crew had wilted down, seemed to blow a fresh stock of vigor into his frame with every gust. One could almost see the process. By way of sanity test, I alluded on purpose to the late captain. I was delighted to find that Mr. Burns did not display undue interest in the subject. He ran over the old tale of that savage ruffian's iniquities with a certain vindictive gusto, and then concluded unexpectedly. I do believe, sir, that his brain began to go a year or more before he died. A wonderful recovery. I could hardly spare it as much admiration as it deserved, for I had to give all my mind to the steering. In comparison with the hopeless languor of the preceding days, this was dizzy speed. Two ridges of foam streamed from the ship's bows. The wind sang in a strenuous note which under other circumstances would have expressed to me all the joy of life. Whenever the hauled-up mainsail started trying to slat and bang itself to pieces in its gear, Mr. Burns would look at me apprehensively. "What would you have me to do, Mr. Burns? We can neither furl it nor set it. I only wish the old thing would thrash itself to pieces, and be done with it. That beastly racket confuses me." Mr. Burns wrung his hands, and cried out suddenly, "How will you get the ship into harbor, sir, without men to handle her?" And I couldn't tell him. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.